This is John Bailey, the epic voice of Honest Trailers, and you're listening to the Five-ish Fangirls Podcast. It's a fangirls podcast with five-ish people. The tangents and squee will continue. Squee.
Tangents and Squee continue all the way to episode 452 of the Five-ish Fangirls Podcast. The bigger these numbers get, the harder it's going to be to wrap my lips around it, but oh well. Welcome! Oh, goodness. Oh, and appropriately enough, since we are now, it's March, it's Women's History Month, so hey, this quote works. Kingpin hat is rung. It's time for a queen! Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the Five-ish Fangirls Podcast. So glad to join us. Let's start off like a derrick with a virtual table and see who's joined us this week.
This is Brittany in Bellevue.
This is Chrissy in Salt Lake City.
This is Holly from Wisconsin.
This is Rachel from Indianapolis, Indiana. Hello, everyone.
Hello. Hey,
future hosts of the NCAA Final Four, men's Final Four, in 2 years.
Hey, we get...
Next couple of years.
Yes, we're talking about March Madness approaching, and I mentioned I'm excited that Salt Lake's got first two rounds. But then, you know, like, well, Indianapolis, like, yeah, we know.
We get a couple rounds too, plus we have the Big Ten tournament. So
I mean, you guys are kind of the center of college basketball nirvana.
A little bit. Yeah, like I said, the NCAA Hall of Fame is here. So when in Rome.
Yep.
Yeah. At least that should go slightly better than our hosting of the speaking of the NBA All-Star Weekend. Which was held over the weekend of my birthday last month, and apparently it was a complete shit show.
This is the thing about All-Star and All-Star stuff. I'll get on my soapbox a little bit here. And this goes for the Pro Bowl as well, is like all these leagues. I mean, for these players, it is an honor to be named Pro Bowl, All-Star, what have you. And they deserve it. And they deserve to have something cool happen. The spectacle of it, I mean, because the game doesn't mean anything, and especially when you have your All-Star break in the middle of the season, and the fans are just kind of like, eh, whatever, like, this has no implications for the playoffs or anything else. So they've, like, tried to come up with ways to make these things better and, like, you know, more televisable, and it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Why have a game at all? Just kind of say, you know, when you have your... when you announce, like, the MVP or your, you know, all your coach of the year, whatever, just say, here, these are the guys, these are the players that we are naming to the All-Star, the Pro Bowl, our team. You guys get a cool little, you might get a bonus in your salary, because you guys don't have enough money, apparently. And, you know, we recognize you for your contributions, your this, your that, your other, and the end. Don't even do a game because the guys don't want to play the game because they don't want to risk injury, which I can completely understand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just, you know, they don't even try. And they just, I don't know. I mean, the NFL tried to do a flag football game 1 year, and that was kind of dumb. I don't know. It's like, I get it. You guys are all overly corporatized, but
mm-hmm.
You really don't have to monetize it. It's okay to not.
Yeah.
Do that. So anyway, I love sports. I love watching competitions and whatnot. But it's like the All-Star type of stuff. It's like just nah, nix it. Mm-mm. Just it's not worth it.
Anyway, yeah. There's a break, but then your better players, if they get injured, you need them in the long run.
Especially
at least at the NFL. The All-Star game is after.
Yes.
The in between the postseason and the Super Bowl, and only people who are not playing in the Super Bowl are eligible to go to the Pro Bowl.
Yes.
Well, so.
Well, you still get named to the Pro Bowl, even if you are going to the Super Bowl, but they used to do the Pro Bowl after the Super Bowl, which I think was a better idea, because it's like, you still want to honor all the players, but they're not going to show up if they, you know, like, we're going to play in the Super Bowl next week. I want to be, you know, rested and ready for that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a mess. I'm like, I get wanting to honor your players, your really good, exceptional players and that kind of thing, but you know, having them play in another game that doesn't mean anything, and they don't want to do it because they don't want to get hurt or they don't want to be worn out. It's like, come on, guys, this is dumb. Just you don't need the game. It's okay, but whatever. I mean, now the NFL's made like a big spectacle of the freaking combine, which was last week, which I guess was kind of a cool thing, but at the same time, it's like.
Usually host that too.
Yeah, you got. Yeah, Indy had that. There's some YouTubers I follow that got to go and show off, and I'm like, well, that's really cool for them. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't think we really need to watch all this because it's just.
I mean, if you can get here, it's something to do. It's kind of cool that it's open to the public.
I think. Okay.
I've never been to it, but
they had it all televised and clips on social media and stuff like. But. What, from what I heard, if like you can watch these guys working out in person, like how fast they go, how far they fall, all these things, like seeing it in person, that's cool. Seeing it on TV, it's fine, but it's, you know, I don't know. I just, sometimes I get a little like, why are you doing this? This is like, yes, we know
there's nothing else to show on ESPN in the middle of the day.
I mean, baseball's going on. They're kind of. Or no, baseball, not baseball, hockey. Basketball's going on, hockey's going on, and other fun things. So, you know, I mean, there's stuff to show, and I'm kind of, this is on a tangent, and this is kind of directed at Nick, because you know, every time I talk to him, he's like, so, you know, kind of bring up, like, who's your hockey team, and I really haven't really picked one. But now that Arizona, they're kind of on the outs over there, and Salt Lake is kind of on the short list of places that they could relocate to, and so I'm kind of like, maybe we'll end up with the Coyotes team, and you wouldn't have to change the name. So maybe that's why I haven't officially picked a hockey team yet, because I'm waiting for Salt Lake to get one. But I know. Well, there's an ownership group that's trying to get an NHL and a Major League Baseball team here, which I'd be okay with. there's stuff all over the news about, you know, the proposed stadium and certain where they're putting it and different things. So I don't want to wade into those waters because I'm just like, people all have opinions and I'm like, whatever. Just.
Oh, what fun it is.
Indeed. Anyway, I guess we can shelve the sports ball talk and get on with our agenda, as it were.
Yeah, not a whole lot in the way of news, although PopCon, Indie PopCon, coming up very quickly, end of next month, has been doing guest announcements. Except by the time we get to the event, we should have close to like 40 guests. Thereabouts, so which I mean, there's already a good number already announced, but you know, if you're a fan of the CW Arrow Flash DC verse, and a fan especially of the Flash and Arrow specifically, we're getting a number of the cast members, including Kayla Compton and Danielle Nicolet and Colton Haynes. Oh, and John Barrowman too. But yeah. Not that I really think about him when it, you know, being part of the DC Arrowverse. He's Captain Jack Harkness. So.
Yep.
Which, oh my goodness.
Indeed. I'm sure he'll talk about both.
We are in. Yeah. Oh, if I thought if y'all were there last year and you thought Rooker was a sight to behold, And you get to see John Barrowman at a convention? Hold on to your hat.
Brooker is the appetizer.
Yes. Cool. This is going to be fun.
Also, and I didn't put this in the show notes, I probably should have. FanX did put out their first round of guest announcements. Some of these I'm very familiar with, some I vaguely know. But starting from the top, there's Susan Sarandon, who has, you know, been around forever. One Anthony Daniels, C-3PO.
Oh, nice.
That him. Nice. Bonnie Wright, you may know her as Ginny Weasley from the Harry Potter movies. John Schneider, who he was back in the day was Dukes of Hazzard, but he also was Jonathan Kent in Smallville, which I've been watching on and off. It's really good. I love it. But then again, I really love the Superman mythos, lore, all that stuff. So anytime I get to enjoy that, that's great. Lana Parrilla, Regina Mills, the Evil Queen from Once Upon a Time.
Nice. Other things.
We got her there. Will Wheaton, everybody's favorite obnoxious Wesley.
Wheaton!
And then Randy Quaid, who... Jitters full! Cousin himself, among other things. He was also in Independence Day. He was the
hey, boys, yes. I'm back!
Yes.
Which locally...
He must have gotten his tax issues straightened out. He's allowed back on American soil.
Maybe. Yeah. Who knows? I was going
to
say...
He was like... He'd gone like to Canada or Europe or something and was like squatting somewhere because he had like outstanding taxes and he went someplace where they couldn't extradite him or something. So,
maybe
this is part of his tax repayment plan.
Maybe. I mean, you show up to these conventions, and I will say... Independence Day was filmed actually not that far from the town where I grew up. So, and in fact, what my seventh grade history teacher was actually an extra in the movie, and he's one of the guys at the beginning of the movie that they're all at that bar or that diner where they're all making fun of Randy Quaid's character for saying he saw aliens. So one of the guys sitting at the table just laughing at Randy Quaid, that was one of them's my seventh grade history teacher.
Nice.
Nice.
So I was like, so Independence Day is kind of a we got a soft spot for that one. But yeah, so FanX has got some guests lined up and announced. So that's not till September, but yeah. And anyway, and then hold on, notes. I looked up those guest announcements. Loading. Mm-hmm. He's old.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. Thanks for cleaning that up, Rachel. So also, this is just today, first day it is available. Jared has. The audiobook version of his first book, The Long Black. This is the first book in his Black Chronicles series, the one in space with Morgan and all of the shenanigans she gets up to. So it is Amazon. It's through Amazon's virtual voice. He was selected for the beta, and he used like the last month and a bit trying to get that ready for prime time. And now it's available. So if you've bought the ebook, you can get the audio for an extra $2. Listen to it through your Audible app. But if you don't have the ebook or the audiobook, obviously, you can bundle them, and it's like $5 for both. So and the voice, it actually sounds like an actual human being. It's kind of it's a little uncanny, but not in a creepy way. And this is a way for an author like Jared, who is like, there is no way he can pay for a professional audiobook reader to read his book. This is a way for him to make that option available for people. So it's cool. So check it out if you feel so inclined. I know I'm like sort of tooting our own horn here, but a lot of people like the book, so hopefully you'll like the audiobook and leave reviews. You can leave reviews on Amazon and on Audible. Apparently there's two different, I guess you can, you know, review the presentation of the audiobook as well as if you like the book or didn't like the book. We'll take all ratings, be honest. We don't want people just to say they liked it just because you're not going to hurt our feelings. So anyway, so we're excited about that. And the rest will be forthcoming in audiobook. Now that he knows how to work it and what he's doing, it should go a lot faster. We're hoping.
Cool.
So I told him I'd plug that, so I did.
That's pretty awesome. Let's see. Speaking of books, in a way, in your gold standard feed, as we continue to wait and see who walks away with the best picture statue coming this weekend, actually, as we're recording this. In the meantime, we're continuing our other films, and we did The Princess Bride.
I will be interested to hear how much is actual review and how much is just quoting it.
You know what? I think we did a pretty darn good job of reeling in the quotes.
All right.
As much as I wanted to. I restrained myself.
Nobody's expecting the Spanish Inquisition, buddy.
Yeah, I know. Wrong movie, but still.
I was going to say, hi.
Yeah, I know.
Same idea.
Yes.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah, so. There is that. And then, again, speaking of books, we are in a new month, so that means book club updates.
Yes, so our book for March is an audiobook. It is an Eighth Doctor adventure called The Sword of Orion. And then the poll for April, our choices are Evil of the Daleks. This is the novelization that Fraser Hines helped out on this time around. Dark Eyes Volume 2. Trading Futures. And then Shadows of... darn. Just a second. It cut off on the post here. Hold on. I'm pulling up my Kindle app because I have the book, so just a second. Of course, you're acting.
The whole music.
Yeah.
Whole music.
Okay, hold on. Of course, it doesn't want to cooperate when I...
This is more hold music. This is even more hold music.
So Shadows of Babylon. There we go. Oh.
Sorry about that. Yeah. So that's another Eighth Doctor adventure with a guest of the Brigadier. So... you have till the end of the month to make your choice. And no, you cannot stuff the ballot box. It's a one and done.
But you can change your vote. You can change your vote and make arguments.
Yeah. All right. There's that. And then just a little bit of feedback from Shalane. She says, since we had a lot of news with Disney and Marvel these past couple weeks, we'll probably learn something new at D23 and San Diego Comic-Con this year. Yeah, definitely. I'm sure that is what they are waiting for. And then, so speaking of Twisted Tales of Disney releases outside of the U.S., I mean, you can still get them on the U.K. Amazon. So, I guess if you could... VPN would help with that or not, but... ordering outside of the country. But I guess if you want to play the prices, I guess Amazon UK wouldn't care. I don't know. There's also third party booksellers out there too, like other than Amazon. There's all sorts of websites. So especially if you don't mind used, there's a website that's kind of like the search engine just for books called Bookfinder. So you can always plug them in there and it'll give you any and all websites that sell books, used and new, where it's available and prices. So so if you don't want to give big Amazon your money, there are other websites out there. You just got to find them. So Bookfinder is a good resource for that. So
indeed.
Yep. That being said, I finally did check with my library on which ones they could get. Unfortunately, there's only like three or four that my library, even with the loan program, I can actually get. But I got the first one, so I got the Mulan one.
There you go.
So what if Mulan had to travel to the underworld? So
interesting.
I look forward to reading it. That is all of Shalane's feedback. So thank you, Shalane.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, moving on to this week's main topic, we head back to the MCU with the really mini series, because it's only five episodes of Marvel's Echo, which is really the bridge between Hawkeye and Daredevil Born Again.
Yes.
So
pretty much.
Yeah. So, but this does give us more of Maya Lopez, who we were introduced to in Hawkeye. More of her story, and also continues the really reign of terror that is Wilson Fisk. Anybody and everybody who crosses his path. While this is it's a good feeder for giving us more of Maya, this isn't necessarily one of those series where it's like drastically changing things within the MCU or like break it, you know, like, oh, I didn't see that coming type thing. It's really just a chance for Maya to move forward in her development as a character so that when we do get to Daredevil Born Again, people in theory will be less confused about who Maya is. So that being said, I will give Disney/Marvel, whoever the powers that be, a lot of pats on the back. It's sad that we have to point this out. This really should be the status quo. This should be the norm, not the exception.
Right.
But, you know, learn from Marvel's example, people, because this is the way you're supposed to do things when you are dealing with characters that aren't white Americans. Is you go and talk to the people of the race or nationality or whatever that is being represented and make sure that you are not doing them dirty.
Exactly.
In this case, we're talking about the Choctaw Nation, you know, indigenous here to, you know, the U.S. Specifically because this was set in Oklahoma, they went and worked with the actual Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. Because, you know, different states, even if they're part of the same nation, they can have variations depending on where they are in the country. They had advisors, that they consulted, various department heads traveled to the nation in Oklahoma to learn about the language, the culture, attend a genuine powwow. You know, as far as like the costume design series, that they collaborated alongside the Choctaw members. So they worked with a number of different tribal leaders and historians and actual artisans to make the costumes, because Maya, she gets her Echo costume in the last episode. And it is very much a full of details and things that we may not recognize are important, but to the people that are being represented, they're going to see it and they're going to notice. And, we should want them to be happy and pleased to see how they are being portrayed on something that's going to be viewed by millions of people. And obviously the what's interesting with this particular miniseries is while the Choctaw language obviously is very important for the characters, that speak it, but also the use of American Sign Language, because Maya is deaf, making sure that is done properly. It helps that your lead actress is deaf and already uses ASL. She knows what's up. Mm-hmm. But still, it's as someone supposedly, because unfortunately my mom tried to do as much genealogical digging for her side. her side several years ago, and that meant going to Oklahoma, actually. to dig as much as she could into both her parents' backgrounds. We hit a lot of dead ends. Supposedly on my grandmother's side, on my maternal grandmother's side, if you go back far enough, it's supposed to go into a couple of indigenous tribes. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, us as a country did the indigenous people dirty as well. So a lot of records don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. If they existed in the first place, they got destroyed. Or stuff just got forgotten because people were taken, from the tribal lands and forced to assimilate into America. As I'm doing very sarcastic air quotes here, aka white America. I take my supposed heritage with a grain of salt, just because we've never been able to find actual proof.
And the other thing too is you throw any amount of people, early European settlers come in and they get contact with the different tribes, and anytime you have a group of different people who are, as long as friendly toward each other, they're gonna intermarry, or they're gonna have kids. It is going to happen. So I mean, we've gone back and back. If your family goes back to, you know, several generations in the United States, and, you know, back far enough, you are probably, there is probably some Native American tribal heritage there, mm-hmm. one way or the other, just because, you know, people.
Yeah.
People mingle.
That's the way things work. Yes.
Yep.
There was a lot of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, regardless of you know, what my heritage may or may not be, I really appreciated the obvious care and attention that Marvel took when creating this. You know, they recognized, you know, how much responsibility they had, and they knew that to screw it up would be just bad. If anything else, they're protecting the brand of Marvel, which, you know, if that's their motivation, fine, whatever.
You should do that with regardless of who you're talking about or what group. I don't care if you're, you know, you come from north, south, east, or west. That ought to be a thing. You're right, Rachel. Yeah. That really should be. That's called responsible storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are some places that it's narratively and socially a little more convenient to do than others.
Mm-hmm.
If we may say such, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate what they did, and I think it makes this series just even more. Yeah, it gives it even more depth and makes it more real. When we get these stories about these Marvel characters, you know, the ones they're calling the kind of the on the street characters, that, you know, they may have abilities, but, you know, they're not jetting off to space. They are, you know, they're not billionaires like Tony Stark. You know, the ones that seem almost otherworldly. And then you've got, you know, your ones that, if you didn't know any better, you'd think they were just a regular everyday person. Yeah, you'd think Jessica Jones is just a private eye with a drinking problem, which she is, but she could also, you know, like rip your heart out of your rib cage with her bare hands. Yeah, you think Matt Murdock is just a lawyer. He is. But, you know, he's a really good lawyer. But he can also kick your ass. Maya is one of those that's, you know, kind of under the radar as far as superheroes are concerned. But by being as authentic to the character's heritage, it makes her more real. Especially considering Maya is a comic book character, and the grand scheme of a lot of our others in the MCU, she is fairly new. She made her first appearance in 1999. Granted, it was December 1999, but still, yeah, her first appearance was in Daredevil number 9, which was December 1999. And she was actually created to kind of be the yin to Matt Murdock's yang, where, you know, obviously Matt is limited because he is blind and therefore has to compensate. Because Maya is deaf, she also must compensate. And in the comics, she and Matt date, but she doesn't know he's Daredevil. And then when her father is killed, Wilson Fisk tells her that Daredevil was the one that did it, and she eventually finds Daredevil and proceeds to kick his ass, but then I guess presumably his mask comes off or something, and she realizes that Daredevil and the guy she's been seeing are the same person. And Matt convinces her that Fisk is actually the one that killed her dad. So, and then she shoots Wilson Fisk in the face. Very much pulling from the comics, in this case. Instead of Daredevil being the one that, shows her that Fisk cannot be trusted. Obviously, we saw in Hawkeye they changed it to Clint. Under the veil of him being Ronin, which actually Maya was the OG Ronin in the comic books. so nice little nod to that there.
And this, kids, is why when you're a superhero, you tell your significant other, especially if you're serious, your secret identity. Then it can't be used against you.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at you, Peter Parker.
Yep.
No, I'm still not the ending of Spider-Man 1 from 2002. Even though that was resolved. But...
Mm. So this is the series takes place 5 months after the end of Hawkeye. Initially, Maya thinks that she managed to kill Fisk. I don't know how she thinks she managed to kill him by shooting him in the eye.
Somehow, King of English.
Well, and then, he is only temporarily blind in the one eye. In the comics, she blinds him in both eyes, and he actually ends up having to have reconstructive surgery for him to finally get his eyesight back. In this case, will we ever know exactly how that shooting went down? Maybe, maybe not. Was she that bad of a aim, or like, hesitated at the last minute because, this is the guy that helped raise her. Or did he manage to, move his head just the right amount so that it kind of more grazed and injured the eye instead of going like right into, his skull? Don't know. We may never know. It's just one of those things. It's just one of those things where you just see it, With a few exceptions, nobody really dies in a comic book universe. So. But at this point, Maya thinks that she's killed him, and now she's gone off to her hometown in Oklahoma to take down the rest of his empire and hopefully make sure that, anyone that might be seeking revenge does not come after her, but, we wouldn't have a series if that was the case.
No, indeed.
Nope. So, but what they do for this series, which is interesting to be able to give us the payoff in the final episode. The first episode really is a recap of Maya's bits in Hawkeye. And even some of the flashbacks we see in Hawkeye, we get again with a little bit of new footage. Because Hawkeye was a while ago. What, like 2 Christmases ago? So people may be a little rusty. So it does remind them of what exactly happened. And then from there on out, but we also get part of the episodes of each episode also is a historical, not necessarily flashback, but it's giving us historical context of Maya's legacy and everything that's leading up to her becoming Echo, essentially, you know, becoming the you know, the not superhero, but, you know, the more empowered person, becoming more of herself, because, you know, she was young, and there, you know, they were living there in Oklahoma with her mom and her dad and her grandmother and, you know, cousins and stuff. And she had a cousin that was about the same age, who's her best friend, more like a sister. But her dad's gotten involved in some shady shit. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence of that, when she and her mom go out to go to the store one evening to get ice cream, they're in a terrible car accident because the other side of the shady shit that her dad's involved in, the people that don't like the shady shit, or the enemies or whatever, cut the brakes on the car, causing her mother to die in the accident and caused Maya to lose one of her legs. So that's how they fit in having the amputated leg. Because Maya in the comics is not an amputee. She is deaf, but she's not an amputee. But Alacqua, who plays grown-up Maya, is deaf and an amputee. So they wrote that into that, bolted into the story, as it were. And in a, I like this little tidbit. It's like somebody figured out that I have no idea if this was a influence or not, or if it's just, you know, one of those things that just happens in Hollywood. But when we see young Maya, we see she is played by Darnell Bisso, and Darnell is Alacqua's cousin. So pulling a bit of a Amy Pond. Young Amy Pond. When cousins look close enough to each other, that one could play a younger version of the other. So I thought that was kind of funny.
As long as it works. More power to them.
Yeah. And Besso is not an amputee nor deaf. So she did have to learn how to sign. And then post car accident, they just do the amputated leg with special effects. So easy enough to do. They could do it well enough, you know, in Forrest Gump. So, and they've come a long way in special effects since then. So, but in these kind of historical vignettes that we're also getting in these episodes, we see the origin of, at least as far as the MCU is concerned, the Choctaw Nation, where these people who are living in kind of a pocket universe, they are these kind of seemingly underground dwelling people, and they end up getting attacked, and something happens to their they're part of the universe, so they're forced to flee, and they end up leaving their part of the universe and ending up on Earth and emerge looking human. They take on the identity of the Choctaw, and the one woman, presumably the matriarch of everything, Chaffa, is, you know, would be Maya's like earliest female ancestor. And so each episode is named after what a significant female ancestor in Maya's lineage, and shows the power passing from one generation to another, and this is through the matriarchal side. So that's how we get introduced to Chaffa and the Choctaw people. And then episode 2 is called Loak, and Loak is a female Choctaw, and their particular tribe group is playing stickball against a Cherokee tribe, and apparently the rules are whichever team loses apparently gets like disowned, essentially. You're looked upon as just scum of the earth. And unfortunately, Loak and her team are getting their asses handed them, especially when the Cherokees send out this guy that, is built like a brick chicken house. And it almost looks like they're going to lose. But then while they're in the middle of fighting for control of the ball, she gets a vision. Her hands start to glow, manages to get the ball and score the winning victory. So that's our introduction to Loak. This is about 1200 AD. Time-wise, that's actually about right, for the area that is depicted, because this is in what would eventually become Alabama, obviously much later. But if you go to it's a site known as Moundville, which is just south of modern day Tuscaloosa, there are earthen mounds that look very similar to the ones depicted in this historical vignette, and they are studied and recorded and watched after as a historical place by the University of Alabama, Roll Tide. They date somewhere between 1000 and 1450 AD. So that fits right in. So we have mounds too, actually, here in Indiana. They're kind of all over the place. So ours aren't connected to the Choctaw. I forget which peoples ours are connected to off the top of my head. I've never actually been there. I've known about it for like most of my entire life. It's set up as a national park, so I could go and visit it. I just never have. I probably should one of these days. While I'm still living here and it's convenient. So, meanwhile in the modern day, Maya is doing her best to crumble the last of Fisk's, empire, at least what is there in Oklahoma, because her uncle was part of it. She decides that when a shipment of bang bang boom boom stuff, munitions,
explosions,
explodey bangies type stuff, is being brought in by train from New York, that she should sabotage it, but she needs help. So she gets assistance from personally my favorite character of the entire series, her cousin Biscuits. I love Biscuits. He is so much fun and funny. He is just, because Maya's always been adventurous, and he remembers from when they were kids. So he seems to be maybe a little bit younger than her. But he seems to just be happy to be included. Even if it means maybe potentially making grandma mad at him.
In more ways than one.
Yeah. So, but you know, he does it anyway. and has a lot of fun in the process. And thankfully, you know, everyone gets out, mostly unscathed. Unfortunately, Maya's leg gets damaged in the process, along with grandma's truck.
Yeah. Oh, the look of shame on Biscuit's face when he's driving down and grandma's just giving him the what in the heck did you do, boy?
Yeah. But, you know, it's like, you know, he realizes that we're there, you know, that they're going to be going.
Biscuits. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, he's following. Yeah. He made her, or she made him a little tracker. So he's just following along. And then he realizes that they're going to have to go off roading. And he's like, oh, grandma's going to kill me, but what the hell? And, yeah.
But best to ask for forgiveness than ask for permission, huh?
Yes, because you know grandma would definitely be like, no. Definitely not. So, but he's quite fun. Definitely one of my favorites. And thankfully, what's the dog's name? Billy Jack, something like that.
Yeah. I also love the guy who repairs Maya's leg.
Yeah. That's her. Her grandma's ex-boyfriend. owns the pawn shop, the local pawn shop, because like Maya's come into town and she wants to keep it on the DL, and then what does she immediately do? She goes and blows up a damn train.
You're blended, Maya, you're blended.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, that's really blending in.
I'm just gonna say this, you know, when you've lived in a small town and you roll in And you think you're gonna you know, keep a low profile? No.
Yeah.
There is no way. And I don't care if you've blown up a train or not. People gonna know that you're back.
You so much as sneeze as enter in town, you're gonna be found out.
Yes. It just happens. So, you know, I mean, good luck, but don't count on no one noticing.
Yeah, I mean, Maya is, I mean, she's young. She's got not the best backstory. I mean, it's tragic. Mm-hmm. Her mother killed. By, you know, no fault of their own, bad guys wanting to get revenge on the family. So, and then, you know, this close knit family that she had before, once her mother gets killed, the family falls apart because her grandma, who was her mother's mother, blames Maya's father, and you know, it's like, oh, I wish you never married my daughter in the first place, and you know, just very, very angry, you know, definitely in the anger phase of grieving. Right. And so he takes Maya and they pick up and move to New York, where he becomes part of the Tracksuit Mafia. Trust a bro, as we saw in Hawkeye. And, you know, Hawkeye goes and, you know, does what he does, getting revenge. But it's Fisk that told Hawkeye where to find him in the first place. Because Wilson Fisk is
formidable.
Yeah, he is formidable, but he is royally screwed up in the head. And it's not necessarily his fault. Not that I'm like forgiving his actions, but you know, we get some of his backstory in the Daredevil seasons. And then, you know, we get, for those that may be forgotten or whatever, they reiterate that in this when, you know, Fisk is trying to bond with Maya, because now she doesn't have anybody once her father dies. Because her father had worked for the Tracksuit Mafia, which was part of Fisk's empire, he feels compelled to take care of little Maya. But, you know, in Wilson Fisk's mind, taking care of small child means molding her into super weapon of his own design.
This is how you don't raise children.
Yes.
His own personal little killing machine.
Exactly. Exactly. Making sure that she gets the best education. She gets into, martial arts and learns how to fight and make sure that, you know, she's got, you know, the best prosthetic leg and all that stuff. And it exposes her to violence very early on, which we see in one of the later episodes when he beats up the ice cream vendor because the ice cream guy didn't know that Maya was deaf. Which you would think at some point early on when it really, you know, when the realization, well, whoever realized that Maya was deaf, you know, probably at birth, you know, they test for that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And as soon as she started to learn sign language and how to communicate, that they would have come up with a way for her to let hearing people know that she is deaf.
Most people,
nowadays, like, they carry like a little card in their pocket.
I know when I've had patrons at the library come who are deaf, they will ask, you know, pen and paper, you know, or mm-hmm. we'll find a way to communicate, or they, you know, they can read lips, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. We figure it out. We make a workaround. But it's like, mm-hmm. yeah. Most people, you know, especially if you know, it's a stranger, you've never known them, never interacted before, you know, they make sure they know how, they have a way to communicate that so that you all can all talk to each other.
Yeah, but they never seem to do that with Maya. Like, we see, you know, school-age Maya in class, mm-hmm. you know, not realizing, like, the teacher's giving instructions. And it's like, you would say, I get wanting to send her to a school with hearing kids, mm-hmm. but don't send her to school with hearing kids and not have the tools, or at least tell the damn teacher.
Right.
Hey, yeah. Your student's deaf.
That's just bizarre. Like, no, you know. There are ways to communicate.
It seems like people are kind of dropping the ball a little when it comes to making sure that Maya has, a smooth an upbringing as possible.
It's like we want her to be our mighty ultimate weapon, but you know, helping her navigate life with her limitations and trying to help her smooth things over with other people that she's going to encounter. Nah, we're not going to do that. Just make sure you know how to kill people. That's what's important. Good job. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not it like the most blatantly obvious.
Yeah.
Like sign of that, or you know, example of that is when Fisk is finally released from the hospital and he's come to Oklahoma to see Maya, because in his crazy mind they're still family and could still have a relationship, but he's never bothered to learn ASL. He had an interpreter that followed him around whenever he was with Maya until reached a certain point where he brought Maya into the shadier side of Fisk Industries, that the interpreter knew too much and had her killed.
That's helpful.
Yeah. So when he's released from the hospital after Maya shot him in the face, he goes all the way to Oklahoma, finds Maya, gives her this contact lens that when she has it in her eye, he can speak and it'll augment hands signing in front of him for her. And when she signs, he's got an earpiece that will take what she is signing and interpret it into English in his ear. Because that was easier to do than learn freaking ASL.
That's what I'm like, wait a minute.
Because he did the thing that was going to make it easiest for him. Not for Maya.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't even learn how to sign the freaking alphabet, at least.
At least.
I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, it just goes to show just how, like, out of touch with, you know, Fisk is when it comes to interpersonal relationships.
Or, you know, he wants to show off, like, I got people who can make technology and it's expensive and flashy and awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that this definitely seems like something that, like, either Tony Stark or... Yeah. Or some, you know, Riri or Shuri would invent, because there might be extreme circumstances where that kind of technology would come in handy. But here he is saying, you know, I understand why you did what you did, but I still consider you family. And if you come back to New York, we can start over and be happy again. Oh my God. It's just so... It's so, like, he's so contradictory, you know, because he says one thing, but his actions always say something completely opposite. So
here's your sign.
Yeah. And I mean, it's part of the reason why he's such a compelling villain, because you just don't know what and when he's going to go off. He's like a grenade where somebody's pulled the pin, but you don't know what the timing mechanism was set on.
No.
So he grew up with an abusive father, which, you know, that sucks. You know, he constantly would spend his time hiding in his own bedroom, just staring at the wall while his father beat the shit out of his mother. And eventually it became too much, and he finally, because his father was always demeaning to him and, you know, telling him he's not a real man and all that macho bullshit. But eventually Wilson, you know, as a kid when he's like 12 or something, finally musters up enough courage and beats his father to death with a hammer. Therefore, you know, saving his mother from further beatings, which is great, but that, like, that did something to him. It's like, now I take, you know, it's like, now he's, you know, he's tasted blood. He knows what it's like to kill a person, and now, you know, he's, it made him feel powerful, and now he spent the rest of his life chasing that high from power that he got in that first moment, which is, and it, you know, he claims that family is everything to him, but obviously that's not the case, because then he wouldn't do things like try to kill his adopted niece, because she doesn't want to be his little pawn anymore. She may not mind it when she was a kid, like when he killed the ice cream man, and, you know, she's like, oh, I'm going to kick him too. Like, he's beating this guy, and he's like getting, you know, Wilson Fisk, a lot of times he wears white.
Yeah.
Like some villains do. And, you know, he's getting blood all over himself, and then he's calling whoever, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to need, like, a new vest. I'm like, dude, you're going to need a whole new suit. You are right, covered in blood.
Is it, I don't want her to see me. And then he turns and looks and, oh, hi.
There she is.
Where'd you come from?
Yeah. The car where you left her. wondering what the hell was going on.
Somewhere there's a therapist who's going to make a crap ton of money.
Gonna make the bank, yeah.
This
yeah.
situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, but yeah, it's just like, so while Maya is being reunited with the man that she thought she killed, we are introduced to Tuklo. So this is the late 1800s, and Tuklo is learning to shoot, you know, shotgun with her father. Her father is a light horseman, which was the name given by the 5 civilized tribes of the U.S. to their mounted police force. Which, unfortunately, those groups disbanded in the late 19th century. So that would have been the late 1800s. So they didn't last for very long. they ended up disbanding after the tribes lost their tribal lands. To who? The white man. Although some tribes still use the name, some of the names for various other non-policing type things. Tuklo wants to become a light horseman. Cause she's a really good shot, and her dad's like, no, you can learn to shoot, because that's important, you know, out here in the wild, wild west, you know, if you get attacked by a bear or something, you should be able to protect yourself, but no, light horseman, that's only for the men. And of course she's like, oh darn. And then her dad goes off, to do his light horseman job, to try and take, you know, rail it, you know, round up some criminals. Him and his other men get ambushed by the criminals. But she hears it and goes off and saves her dad and the rest of the light horsemen by being a crack shot. Shows her dad and the other men that gender means diddly squat in this case.
What is it that Eowyn said in Lord of the Rings? The women of this country long ago, I don't know how to go, the women of this country learned long ago that those who do not wield swords can still die by them?
Yes.
Pretty much.
The principle applies here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we get one more historical vignette to young Maya. With the ice cream vendor and all that, and then we see her growing up and becoming trained and molded by Fisk, and then he's like, okay, time to bring you into the real stuff. And he's gonna send her on her first mission, but he has to kill the translator first because the translator knows too much. And then we actually see that mission, that very first mission she does for Fisk, all the way back in the first episode, where she and a couple other guys are going to take down some guys that are telling, giving information to Fisk's enemies or something, something that Fisk thinks is worth, beating up and or killing people for. Who knows? Maybe they looked at him funny crossing the street. With Fisk, it's hard to tell.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. But in the process, they get themselves into the secret lair, and start fighting. And this is where Maya kills her first person. But Maya's mission gets interrupted by Matt Murdock, aka Daredevil. So she, Maya and Daredevil fight, and she doesn't get the complete crap beat out of her, which Fisk is impressed with. Because usually Daredevil takes out all of his men fairly easily. But it was nice to see Charlie again, even if it was just for a little bit. They were good. I guess there was going to be way more of Daredevil in this, but when they decided to, there were some issues with the production of Daredevil board again, and when that got sidetracked, that threw off, everything. So
they basically have to start from scratch with that.
Yeah. One. Yeah. They kind of did. They kind of scrapped everything, brought in a whole new writing team and everything. So, but because of that, I'm sure for continuity reasons, to make things less confusing, with any of the changes that are occurring with Daredevil born again, they cut Charlie's stuff down to just this one kind of cameo. But still, nice to see him. Always a good time to see Charlie. But now we're back in the present, and Fisk is trying to convince Maya to come back to New York with him. He's in the communicating with the stupid, contact lens thing. And she ends up finally going to see her grandmother, Chula, Maya had a vision of their ancestors, and Chula ended up having the same vision. And then Chula tells her the story of what occurred while she was giving birth to Maya's mother, and how there were complications, and if she was going to die giving birth to this child, she essentially wanted to do it in the presence of their ancestors. So she left the hospital and went with some other women of the tribe and proceeded to give birth out in the middle of the woods, far away from any medical care.
No.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
No. You do you, boo boo. No.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
But apparently she had these visions of the ancestors, and they helped her through it, and obviously she lived. And Maya's mother, Taloa, lived. So everything worked out in that case.
Only in movies. Only in movies. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Only in movies, only in comic books.
Yeah. As someone who did have some complications with a pregnancy, you know, giving the birth and whatnot, I was very, very glad to be in a hospital with all manner of modern medical,
science,
yeah.
technology,
sterile equipment, competent medical professionals. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's all I will say about that.
Yeah. Fair enough. I've never given birth, but I had a gallbladder taken out, and I definitely appreciated the medical assistance there. So.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. So Maya and her grandmother kind of mend fences. Kind of. Sort of. And Maya goes to confront Fisk at his hotel with a gun. He's like, "What are you gonna do? Kill me again?"
Don't tempt her.
I'm going to come back with the power of plot armor.
Mm-hmm. And he reveals that he is the one responsible for her father being killed, just like he killed his own father. He's even kept the hammer that he used as a reminder. He's like, "You gotta shoot me, shoot me." And of course she can't do it. He's like, "The offer, New York, still stands. If you wanna come join the fun." And then he finds out that she's left to go somewhere, but obviously not with him. Which pisses him off, because again, Fisk is a landmine, or grenade, or whatever. And in retaliation, he kidnaps her grandmother and her best friend, the cousin from when they were kids. And she finds out from Biscuits, and realizes that shit's going down at the powwow. Not just with Fisk himself, but a bunch of his goons have come to the grounds where they are holding their annual powwow ceremony get together. Maya manages to sneak in with the other costumed individuals because her grandmother made her what is going to be presumably Echo's outfit for the foreseeable future. After she has a vision of her mother, letting her know that, you know, she's stronger than she thinks, and she's got the power of her ancestors behind her and all that, you know, kind of building up the hero so that they can go do the hero thing. And then all shit breaks loose. So Fisk's men get taken out between her uncle and her grandmother's ex-boyfriend, who is very handy. He doesn't just run a pawn shop, but he's very handy. He ends up not only repairing Maya's leg, but improving it for her, so that she's not going into this final confrontation, with any sort of handicap, literal and figurative. there's a thing involving a grenade launcher that guy gets stopped, thankfully. A whole bunch of Fist's men who are in, you know, like, you know, big old delivery truck, like the bad guys like to do, the unmarked van. They get stopped by Biscuits in a monster truck. Again, I love Biscuits. He's just like, he gets in this monster truck and he's like, ah! Yeah, just running over these guys' vehicles and all their weapons and stuff. Like, ha ha! Biscuits is here to save the day and I'm here for it. But then Maya, through the encouragement from her grandmother and the vision of her mother, taps into the spirits of her ancestors, and specifically the women that we've been introduced to in these episodes, and is able to tap into the power that they have. Her mom is a healer. Her mom did have power, but she used it as a healer. But she's able to tap into, you know, Chaffa's, you know, warrior abilities, Loax, you know, like athleticism from the stickball game, Tuklo's sharpshooting, and, you know, her mother's just kind of empathy, and is able to actually share that power temporarily with her grandmother and her cousin. And they're able to take out all the guys that are holding them hostage. And then she specifically taps in, Maya specifically taps into her mother's like empathetic abilities and forces Fist to go back to that time when he killed his father, hoping like she's trying to do like crash course, like psychology, EMDR or something. Thinking maybe that, you know, if he can let go of this pain, maybe he won't be such of a bastard. Which, I mean, nice try, Maya. I appreciate the effort. Unfortunately, it doesn't work. It does change Fisk a bit, but it doesn't like cure him of the trauma and everything that he suffered as a kid. You know, that's not something, even if her abilities could do that, I don't think that's something that could be done in one like session. It's probably something that would require multiple interventions to see if they get anywhere, would be my guess. But he does allow Maya and her family to go, and he's like, you know, the cops are coming, I'm getting the hell out of here, bye, forget I ever saw you, we don't know each other. So then, you know, Maya and her family are reconnected as best they can. They're not as fractured as they were when she was a little girl and her grandmother was upset with everything. And then we get the mid-credit scene of Fisk on the plane on his private jet headed back to New York, watching the news and seeing that they're talking about the New York City mayoral race and that there aren't really any good contenders and somebody really should step up to the plate, who would actually be a good mayor leader for New York City. And Fisk gets this look on his eyes like, politics. That could be an idea.
Well, they're all corrupt bastards anyway, so he fit right in.
Yeah. And Mayor Fisk is a well-known comic book story, and that's essentially going to be the plot for Daredevil Born Again is Mayor Fisk. But yeah, I like what they did for having this be Maya's ability. Because in the comics, she's called Echo because she's more of in the comics, her abilities are more like Taskmaster. If you remember from the Black Widow movie. who, once they see somebody do something, they can replicate it.
It is a less draining version of Rogue in some ways.
Yeah. And in the comics, it's not just fighting that Maya, you know, Maya is able to, like, observe pretty much anybody doing anything and can perfectly do it, even if it's something that, like, she becomes, like, an Olympic-level athlete. She becomes, like, a concert pianist along with some other instruments, which, considering she's deaf, you know, more power to her. You know, she doesn't have to watch the person in it, like the person doing their thing in person. She can do it off of video. So right. She learns how to like shoot like Bullseye and Hawkeye just from watching video of the two of them. So while it's a good ability, we've already seen that with Taskmaster. Mm-hmm. And that worked for Black Widow, because the widows are, you know, as Natasha says, you know, in the first Avengers, she's got a very specific skill set, and to have someone that can copy that makes the Black Widow less formidable if you can match them blow for blow. In this case, the idea of Echo and what her mother, the vision of her mother, is the abilities and power of your ancestors echoes through time to you and through her. So it's a bit more mystical in that way, but I like it. I like that, like, she's tapping into abilities from, you know, her ancestors, and tap into their strengths and utilize them as their own, kind of like in Everything Everywhere All at Once, in a way, where, you know, they can tap into the abilities of a them from another universe. And in this case, Maya's not tapping into other hers, but her ancestors. But it's kind of the same idea. And I think that's really cool. And I think that's a very interesting take on Maya Lopez and her abilities, and making it more tied to her ancestry and, you know, her lineage. And that's, you know, obviously something that we, similar, but not quite the same, when we talk about What If Season 2, with our indigenous character there, where it's kind of this mystical ability, although her power comes from the Tesseract, in theory. But, you know, these characters, you know, bringing the power from within themselves. And tapping into that, I think it's a good message, for one. Yeah, the whole "you are stronger than you think you are" type thing. And it also gives us some more variety as far as you know, characters that we're likely to see again in the future. You know, whether Maya is going to become part of the Young Avengers or what is TBD, I guess, at this point. But yeah, that's Echo.
There you go.
Just have to wait and see till they can finally get a wrap on Daredevil Born Again.
Yeah.
Because that's where we're at now, is just kind of waiting for Daredevil Born Again to see where this is going. They have, I don't know where exactly this was said, but I saw someone say, and they showed like a screenshot, so I don't know if it was a press release or something, I don't know if it was Kevin Feige or whoever, but someone high up at Disney/Marvel has confirmed that in some capacity, all of the Defenders stuff that was on Netflix is canon.
Nice.
So, you know, how much? TBD. But it is canon. So, we've got that. And we know from this that at least Maya and Fisk were not snapped. So they didn't blip. They were around. Matt, presumably, as well, didn't get blipped. The other Defenders will have to wait and find out. So my guess, some of them did and some of them didn't, and they're all equally pissed for the different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine Jessica, like, if she didn't get blipped, she's probably pissed that she didn't. She probably would have liked the 5-year vacation.
Yeah.
Although I'm guessing there was not any brown liquor in wherever it was that everybody went for the 5 years. Nope. So,
by what people's reactions were to finding out they had been blipped, it was probably like, you know, I was here 1 minute, I left for a little bit, went left to go to the bathroom, I got blipped, and then I came back, and it's 5 years later. So they probably mm-hmm. didn't notice. Or at least that's what happened with Monica in WandaVision.
Yeah, like, at least still got explained to her.
True, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, they're like,
there's no vacation here.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know. I'm just like, either way, I'm just, you know, I'm happy that, you know, we've got Maya. I think she's a great addition to the MCU. I think that they're going to have, again, with the way that they have, you know, finagled her abilities for the MCU. I think she's going to be a fun addition. You know, she's obviously a force to be reckoned with. No matter how you slice it. Bring on Daredevil Born Again and Mayor Fisk, and I want Jessica Jones back. I want my girl back.
They'll figure it out.
I know.
All right. Well, any other commentary anyone wants to throw in? Speak now or forever hold your peace. Mm-hmm.
It is brutal. You know, it's got mm-hmm. the mature rating for a reason. You know, I would say if you watched the Defenders, you know, what they're calling the on the street heroes, and you were okay with that level of violence, you should be okay with this, because it's, I would say, a notch below that, probably just because there's only 5 episodes, so you can only fit in so much. And I kind of dragged, I will admit, you know, as much as I am, you know, an MCU fangirl, I did drag my feet a little on watching this, just because I haven't necessarily, when it released, I wasn't necessarily in the best mindset to watch something that mm-hmm. violent.
Yeah, same here.
So I had to wait until I was, you know, in a spot where I could handle it. And that's not anything on their fault, you know, because, again, Jessica Jones is my girl. And, you know, whenever she returns, I will be there with bells on. but, you know, it has been a while since we've had anything like this in the properly in the MCU. You know, obviously, we've got Deadpool coming. So, you know, we're going to have to get used to a slightly bloodier, slightly more violent at least corner of the MCU, because of, you know, these guys and Deadpool and maybe some of the X-Men too, depending on how Deadpool 3 pans out, what happens there. You know, it's still not like Game of Thrones bloody or violent. So, like, Game of Thrones is, like, really up there when it comes to blood and violence. So, but if you were able to watch Daredevil and you know, Luke Cage and all of that, and you were okay with that level of violence, then you should be okay with this. So,
yeah. So, just know that for sure, and know what your limits are, and act accordingly. So there you go. Well, if any of our listeners have watched Echo or just want to comment on anything that we've talked about recently or today or whatever, send us some feedback if you feel so inclined. Our email address is fiveishfangirls@gmail.com. You can also visit our website, which is thefiveishfangirls.com. You can leave comments there. We have our show notes. We have links to, you know, all of our social media where you can leave comments or, you know, check up on the news and goings on and all of our sort of fandoms of what we're doing and stuff like that. You could also have a YouTube channel where sometimes we'll post a few extra tidbits that don't make it onto the podcast or not really conducive to audio only. We also have, like we said, we're everywhere you can find podcasts, so don't worry about looking for us. Or if we're not on where you like to listen, we're there. We're probably pretty much there. We're everywhere. And you could also, if you can and if you would like to, you can support us through Patreon or our merch shop. Is also an option, and that just helps us keep the podcast, keep the costs down. I mean, there are some with publishing a podcast, it happens. So, but we're very appreciative of whatever, however you decide to support and interact with us. It's great. We love that you're out there listening, hopefully enjoying what we our output, and thank you for being our audience and our generous and faithful supporters. We really do appreciate it. So have an excellent week, whatever it is that you're up to out and about. And hopefully it didn't snow where you are, because I've had snow all weekend and it's been miserable.
No, it's been gorgeous here, but I'll get what you're getting here later this week. So
yeah, probably. I mean, we have a tree that is right over our driveway, which is nice on sometimes, but then the fruit started to sprout, and then the snow fell and knocked all the fruit out, and so now my car looks like, you know, fruit guts everywhere. It's kind of gross. I don't even know what kind of fruit it is. It's just some weird berry that's in that tree, and I walked out yesterday to my car and I'm like, this actually looks kind of gross. Or the birds were picking at it, I don't know, but
this looks like a crime scene without being a crime scene.
Pretty much, yeah. I was like, this, like, just kind of the way that it smeared all over. I'm like, trying not to think too hard about this, but ew. Just, it looks gross.
It's like, do I even tempt the fates and do a car wash? Because you know exactly what's going to happen when you do a car wash.
I know. I was thinking about doing that after work, and I'm like, but it's still cloudy. It could snow. So anyway, so wherever you are, I hope the weather's treating you well. And, you know, stay warm if it's not.
Yep. We'll get through it together, folks. We'll get through it together.
We will. We'll have spring for like 5 seconds, and then it'll be hot as hell.
All right, then. Oh, with... that, we shall sign off for this week.
This is Brittany Bilko saying goodnight.
This is Chrissy saying goodnight from Salt Lake City.
And this is Holly from Wisconsin saying good evening.
This is Rachel in Indianapolis, Indiana. Coming up, the Oscar goes to... Thank you, our five-ish fam, for joining us on this week's geeky journey. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. Stay connected with us on our website, thefiveishfangirls.com, and follow us on most social media with @fiveishfangirls. Plus, check out our nonprofit, Fangirls Give Back, to see how we're making a positive impact in our community. Until next time, stay nerdy and let the squee continue.